And revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go slightly out of order here today and start off with SJR 18 and then go to Senate Bill 925, work session Senate Bill 190, and then go to the hearing on 663, if that helps you organize your iPhone and iPad business that you have to do while we carry on this hearing. That'll be maybe good. So let's start off with Senator Beyer on Senate Joint Resolution 18. Did you want to do a short summary, Dr. Warner?
Mr. Chair, yeah, SJR 18 is a constitutional amendment. What it does is establish an education support fund, and the revenues for that fund are to come from a sales tax imposed at a rate not to exceed a blank amount in the Constitution. So there would be a limit on that rate.
Senator Beyer, thank you. We're in the spirit of tax reform this session, and appreciate your engagement on that issue.
Well, thank you, Senator Haas, members. For the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator from Central Lane and Linn Counties. You have an interesting agenda. It looks about the same as my 10 years on the Revenue Committee. So.
Wait a minute.
Still asking Paul to do tax reform proposals.
Yes.
I move for a no vote on this thing.
You don't have the easiest agenda. Senators, my proposal, SJR 18, is very simple, and it's intended to be very simple. It's a proposal that responds to what I think all of us here, probably the most common credit, is we're not adequately funding education. And we all know that the reason we're not adequately funding education is there's not enough money there, irrespective of the fact that back in 2000, the people of Oregon passed the quality education model that requires this body every year to, or every biennium, to come back and say, well, the reason we're not funding education is we don't have enough money. I mean, that's standard. That's what they've required us to do. One of my frequent comments with people now is, well, are you willing to pay for it? If you want better education, are you willing to pay for it? And so this is an attempt, it's a very simple attempt to put that in front of them. It's my firm belief that while we can do all kinds of tax reform, which I think we probably should be doing, it's a zero-sum game when you get into that for the most part. And what we really need to talk about is more money. You know, and what this does is simply refer to the voters the question as sort of a put-up-or-shut-up question. If you want to fund education, you're going to have to reach a little deeper into your pocket to fund it. And it's my view, having done that, is the only way you're going to get at that is some form of a consumption tax, because we already know that our income tax is way high. We know that our property tax system has been constrained by the voters. I know you're discussing other changes to that, but I would submit that you may get a better property tax system, but you're not going to get much more money out of it. And so that leaves the question, if you want to fund education, you're going to have to look at a new source. And I think that's fair. We know that any proposal that we might do as a legislature is going to end up on the ballot, so we ought to just send one to them. The most common refrain about sales taxes, it's been up there 9 times and people have said no. And I would remind people that the income tax in Oregon was on the ballot 9 times before it was passed. So there's some merit in consideration. Now, to this particular proposal, what I think has some merit behind it and where the public might warm up to it is in past efforts when we've tried to put sales tax ideas in front of the voters, we've been very detailed and laid everything out, and I think the more you put out there, the more option you give people to find something they don't like. This is merely a question that says, would you support a consumption tax of some form? And I asked legislative counsel to write it very, very general, with the idea that if the citizens decided they wanted to support it, it would be up to a subsequent legislature to define what that would be. And I would say that you had the full range, if the public chose to go there, of doing that, everything from a general sales tax, such as Washington State, to a B&O tax like Washington State, to the cap tax that you're looking at from Ohio. All of those things would fit under this description of a sales tax. So it would be up to the legislature appropriately to define that. it's also got a space in there. I think you'd have to, if you're going to pass it, I believe you have to dedicate it to education. So what this proposal does is it says that it would establish an education fund, and that fund would be locked by language of the Constitution, could only be used to fund education. And there's also a maintenance of effort clause attached to it, which would attach to whatever budget, if it were to be enacted in November, it would freeze in the general fund appropriation that we currently, well, we haven't yet, but whatever. Well, I guess we have. We have passed the general fund appropriation for education. So it frees in that level, however we adjust it this year, and then it has a cost of living adjustment. So the public would know that if they voted for this, they were actually adding to education, not having it supplanted, as we've seen happened in 1995 with the Parks measure. So that's the intent that's there. The percentage is the space is open there. I would suggest to you, you know, that Mr. Warner and I showed me some revenue projections. A 1% sales tax generates about $1.5 billion, a little less. 1% Ohio side's thing would do about the same amount. So with a very small cap of 1-3%, I would stay on the lower end, I think you could tell people that they will be almost or could hit their quality education model target. Very simply, and I would suggest if you you could run a very easy kind of, someone could, 1% for education, and that would be enough to significantly fund the education system and reach the quality education model. So I think it's a fair measure to put in front of the voters. I don't think, personally, don't think it's a hard vote to say we're not telling you we're going to do it. We're just putting it out there and say, if you really want to fund education, here's your opportunity to fund it. If you vote yes, it's locked in the Constitution. You actually get what you're paying for. And one of the merits in that, one of the things that I've observed to the public recently, I've been involved in a number of local campaigns for cereal levies. And what I have learned from that experience and watching across Oregon is when Oregonians clearly understand what they're buying, they tend to vote for it. It's amazing that most of the school local option programs for school districts, not all of them, but most of them seem to pass. I've had experience with park levies, if you look around. When the public knows what they're buying, they're willing to vote for it. What they don't like are general taxes that they have no control over, and quite frankly, they have no faith in legislatures or city councils or county commissions spending their money wisely. They want to know exactly what they're voting for and what they're getting for that money, and that's what this measure does. That's the attempt anyway. And as I said, it's sort of a put up or shut up, you know. So that's it, Mr. Chair. That's what I got.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. Any questions on this point? Well, we thank you for engaging.
Well, thank you for considering.
There's a lot that we agree with you in that bill and some of the concepts that we're looking at on these other bills. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the public hearing on SJR 18. And with the concept and the notion of tax reform still in the air, I'm going to open up a public hearing, and I'm going to open up a work session, excuse me, on Senate Bill 925. This is the commercial activities tax that replaces the corporate income tax and lowers personal taxes that I'd like to take action on today in terms of moving the dash ones only and holding off on moving the rest of the bill. Dr. Warner, can you refresh us on what that amendment does? You all have copies. It's on OLAS.
Okay. The dash ones you looked at a week ago, and what they do is they establish a framework for commercial activity tax in Oregon, and it's the framework is based on the experience in Ohio, the commercial activity tax there, and I did include in OLAS the Ohio Department of Taxation annual report on the CAT, so that's an update I think from something that you've seen in the past. The rest of the bill, the rate that would be applied to commercial activity is left blank in the bill at this point. It does eliminate the corporate income and excise tax, and modifies the personal income tax rates to blank amounts, presumably lower rates, increases standard deduction by an unspecified amount, and also allows for an increase by an unspecified amount of the earned income tax credit as a percentage of the federal credit.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment dated 5/12/15 into SB 925, and then I'll speak to my motion.
Senator Boqvist moves the dash ones into Senate Bill 925. Senator Boqvist?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you discussed here, I mean, we'd like to put the dash one into the main bill for the purpose of having a broader discussion and getting public input on some of the revenue neutral tax reforms for discussion. It's not the intent to move the bill today. It's the intent, you know, to lay it out and get people interested. Obviously, that's working because I think last time I was in here, two times ago, we had one person, and I told that lobbyist they should probably did it. Then we had 13 people, and now the room's getting fuller. So with that, I'll be supportive of the dash one into the main amendment.
Thank you. Other discussion? Senator Archer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'll be voting yes to move the dash one amendments in there to continue the conversation. Mm-hmm. But please don't construe that as a overwhelming support for this bill at this time.
No, that's what I have written down for you.
I don't.
The overwhelming or the not overwhelming? I'm just checking here. Sometimes, you know, our side doesn't communicate well.
Senator Riley, you okay? All right. Yes, I think that's exactly right. We want to keep the conversation going, put this idea and concept into all this and keep reflecting and talking about it. Obviously, there's blanks and there's still quite a bit of language that needs to be drafted when we get closer. So any objections to this amendment? So ordered, the amendment will be adopted into Senate Bill 925, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 925, and I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 190. Is Mazen or Dr. Warner here for
it's
a quick?
Kyle.
I'm sorry, Kyle.
So how did property tax become? How did the property tax guy become this one? I'm missing something.
He's a jack of all trades.
Master of none. That's the other half of that, Kyle. You hear that? You should complain to your employer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 190, you'll remember the committee heard this in public hearing last week. It's a bill that would prohibit shipment of transportation of cigarettes and tobacco products through the mail, telephone, and also online. So essentially it's requiring face-to-face transactions for retail sales of tobacco products, and it provides civil action enforcement to the Attorney General.
Right.
We do have the paperwork on this. The fiscal is expected to be none, and the revenue impact is minimal.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 190A to the floor with a due pass, and I'll speak to my motion.
Sir Boqvist, you're Johnny on the spot here. I think I'm ready to go, but if anybody has questions here, I know the Justice Department and the Attorney General's office is here. So if not, Senator Boqvist moves the bill SB 190 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boqvist.
Mr. Chair, I mean, conceptually, I don't have a problem with the bill. I still have questions, so at the moment, I'll be a no vote, and I'll have further consultations with my good colleagues from the Department of Justice and Attorney General's office before we get to the floor. Thank you.
All right. Duly noted, Senator Boqvist, for the moment, is a no. Further discussion? Senator Hartsiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the onset of this bill, I was under the impression that by statute we already had the ability to do what we're trying to be accomplished. Department of Justice relatively convinced me that they need a little bit more, but I will be voting yes on this bill, but I'm still, you know, I'm just still grappling with it.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sort of like the senator at the other end of the desk. I'm a yes for the moment. He's a no for the moment. I'm a yes for the moment. I think this is a bill that we need to move forward.
Okay. Well, we are at a moment in time here, aren't we?
Got to take advantage of it.
We're trying to be cooperative, Mr. Chair.
Yes, it's a snapshot in time. Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Bartsugger?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Boqvist?
No.
Senator Haas?
Haas votes aye. Edwards excuse. Senate Bill 190 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Senator Birchiger, we're up to you on the list.
Oh, great.
Yes.
That's great.
Senator, I want you to know there's a reason I voted no.
Are you sure you want me to carry this bill?
I am not sure about that.
I believe Senator Edwards is an ideal candidate. Since
he's not here. Pull his name out of the hat.
I'll tell you what. I will let you off the hook. I'll carry the bill. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 190 and move to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 663, Tobacco Road. Mazen is here for a brief presentation. We have a couple of people here to testify. Go ahead, Mazen.
Morning, Mr. Chair. As committee, Senate Bill 663, what you have today in front of you is a dash 8 amendment. And I have to say, yes, although I gave up smoking and chewing tobacco and vaping, this is only a momentary relapse.
We were all really happy when you gave up vaping.
Oh, thank you. A8, the amendment, just to go quickly with that with you, is primarily replaces the bill. It changes the almost all the complexion of the authority who is doing what, basically, in this new regulatory type of atmosphere. So it takes the Liquor Commission, the OLCC, out of the picture, and the two main agencies that would be working with this will be the Oregon Health Authority as well as Department of Revenue. And it primarily goes back and redefines what is a retail process. Brings in it the inhalant delivery system or the vaping new definitions, and it pulls in the other tobacco sales and as well as the cigarettes into the definition of who is a retailer. And then constitutes or makes the necessity of a retail license, and that retail licenses would only be for the state. There is in page 2, section 2, sub 2, a city and county may not adopt, so it takes out the ability for the locals to do that licensing type. And then it builds all the different processes and the civil penalties and so on for the different requirements. However, it really is the one thing that is very still puzzling me about the bill is I don't really get what they're trying to enforce exactly. So there is this level of still not or lack of clarity in the purpose statement, I guess. But the main thing that takes away the revenue policy issue for the committee is the change from the 21 requirement or the age of 21 to buy the licensed retailer and bringing it down to 18. And in that sense, that takes away the revenue impact possibility that would have been effective under this regime. So it puts all the retail processes into licensing, and then it puts a whole loop of civil penalties and so on. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair, and because it just the amendment came out last night, it wasn't possible to turn around and get the different agencies and fiscal to be able to put together a fiscal impact on it. And it seems like it will just take probably another day or so to be able to do that.
Thank you. Senator Steiner Hayward is here. Originally, she worked on this bill. Come on up, Senator. And just to set the stage a little bit, from what I understand, Oregon is one of only 8 states that doesn't have a tobacco licensure arrangement, and it's been the recommendation of national organizations, health organizations, that one of the best ways to keep some distance between tobacco and minors is to have a licensing mechanism. And so that's what we're trying to do here today. So go ahead.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from Senate District 17. And I appreciate your taking the time to hear this bill and hopefully move it when you do have the fiscal and revenue back. As Mr. Chair mentioned, Oregon is one of only 8 states in the nation that does not require a licensure of tobacco retailers. And this bill stemmed from a work group that met throughout the interim between the 2013 session and now among advocates for tobacco control and prevention and also e-cigarette control and prevention. All of you will be aware that the Senate passed House Bill 2546 last week that would restrict the sale of inhalant delivery systems, a broader term for e-cigarettes and other things, to minors and include them in the Indoor Clean Air Act. That was the primary focus of this work group, but out of it stemmed an interest in a range of other tobacco control measures, tobacco control and prevention measures. We know that the later people experience using tobacco, the less likely they are to become addicted. And the more that we can do to control the use of these products by minors, the better. And so licensure, retail licensure, so that we know exactly where tobacco products are being sold and can do appropriate enforcement, is an important part of this conversation. That's what this bill does. It's pretty much that simple. And the reason for the change from OLCC to the Department of Revenue and the Health Authority is twofold. First and foremost, the Department of Revenue is already involved with tobacco retailing because they're the ones who do the taxation of it. And so they're already engaged with wholesalers and to some extent retailers of tobacco. So having them do the licensure piece makes it more cost effective, which is very important as well. And they estimate that the cost for licensees would be much lower than were it to be done through OLCC. Furthermore, the partnership with OHA makes sense because the Division of Public Health there has the responsibility for tobacco control and prevention, and they're the ones who have already got a lot of experience in working on these issues and have expertise in this area. So they can collaborate more appropriately with local authorities and other state agencies to work on tobacco control and prevention and enforce the licensure arrangements. We think that this will be more effective and more cost efficient than were it to be done through OLCC. Finally, as we all know, OLCC will have a brand new responsibility relating to marijuana, and asking them to take on 2 large new projects simultaneously does not strike us as a thoughtful thing to do, especially when we have 2 other state agencies who are already engaged with tobacco. So Senate Bill 663 with the dash A8 amendments would, as Mr. Malik said, allow the Department of Revenue to require the Department of Revenue to license tobacco retailers and to collaborate with the Oregon Health Authority in enforcement. It would also do certain core things. For example, it would require licenses to be associated with a fixed physical address. One of the biggest challenges with enforcement of tobacco sales is mobile sales, setting up carts at events and things like that, and we want to prevent that from happening because that's a place where it's really tough to enforce who's able to buy tobacco products. Furthermore, it does not prohibit local jurisdictions from enacting ordinances around the time, place, and manner of sales. So, for example, they can't local jurisdictions cannot require an additional license, but they could say that they don't want these things sold within 1,000 feet of schools, as we do with liquor and other things like that. and as we will be doing with marijuana, which makes sense. You don't want the kids seeing these things on their way to school. But whatever local jurisdictions chose to enact in terms of ordinances, those would be appropriate. It's just that the license itself would come from the state and not any local jurisdiction. I'm disappointed but not surprised that we had to take the 21 part out. I know people say that, well, if people can sign contracts or be sent off to serve our country at 18, they should be allowed to smoke. I would argue pretty strongly that they can be sent off to serve our country or volunteer to serve our country but still aren't allowed to drink until they're 21, and tobacco is at least as dangerous as alcohol. However, we'll continue that conversation in a future session. We know that tobacco control and prevention is not, there's not one single path to helping reduce the use of tobacco. We have to take multiple steps to do so. You also have before your committee Senate Bill 415, which would limit the use of flavorings. I'm not sure what the likely prognosis for that bill is, but were we to consider it, I think we would start by limiting it only to chewing tobacco, because that's really where we have the problem with these candy flavors and things like that. But the point is that there are multiple ways that we should be approaching tobacco control and prevention. Licensure is one of them. Oregon should not be one of the only states that doesn't require licensure that would allow us to enforce in a more traditional way. So you will have other experts testifying. I won't take too much of the committee's time or repeat things that they're say already, things that they have more expertise in. But I wanted to give the overview about the origins of this bill and why I, both as a legislator and as a family physician, think that this is an important step forward for Oregon in reducing tobacco use. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Steiner Hayward, Senator Bartsugger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just, you know, I probably don't understand how the licensing is going to help. And the reason is we have multiple laws on the books already about endangering the welfare of a minor, prohibits free distribution to minors of tobacco products, retail signage requirements for tobacco products, random inspection of tobacco products, tobacco possession by minors is prohibited, tobacco purchase by minors is prohibited, the location where vending machines are, minors can't have access to it, sales of tobacco through mail, requirements for people that ship tobacco products, public instruction on the effects of tobacco, which I strongly support that, and it prohibits minors from having tobacco products in public facilities. I mean, I just don't see how licensing is going to help with that, and that already we have a statute on the books that gives the Department of Revenue the ability to license. So Senator Steiner Hayward, I'm just struggling with this, because then on the other side we have over 90 sanctioned stores that sell alcohol in the state of Oregon that also we encourage to sell tobacco products as a state of Oregon to help them with their revenues. I start seeing hypocrisy here, and so I'm really struggling with this. And you know, I agree 100% with you that tobacco is not healthy and it should be keeping out of the kids' hands. I agree with you. I just don't see how licensing gets us there, okay?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bertrager, thank you for asking that question. It's a really important one, and I think I can provide an answer that may help you understand this a little bit better. You're right. We have a lot of laws on the books that are aimed to reduce use of tobacco by minors and to prevent retailers from selling to children, right? And those are all really good laws. As I said, tobacco control and prevention is a multifactorial approach. We have to do lots of different things, some of which are the things that you listed there. Here's the big difference, and here's why licensure matters. All of those things, if, for example, a clerk is found in a store to be selling tobacco to a minor, all that happens is that particular clerk gets fined. Nothing happens to the store manager, even with repeated violations. It's only that frontline clerk, probably somebody who's working part-time to help pay their way through school, who gets fined, and who the person who can least afford it, right? However, in an establishment that sells alcohol, if they sell alcohol to a minor, they can have their liquor license suspended or revoked, which means they can no longer sell what is a very profitable product, right? We don't have that ability with tobacco. Retail licensure, as the Dash A8 amendment says, can be revoked for repeated violations, either on the revenue side or on the tobacco prevention side. And so the point about licensure is that it's a very effective tool to remind store owners about the importance of making sure that nobody in their establishment ever sells tobacco to a minor, because if they're caught doing it, they can lose their license, and tobacco is profitable. Now, I don't know about your point about encouraging liquor stores to sell tobacco. If that's true, I wasn't aware of it, and I'm disappointed in that fact. I can't see why the state would encourage anybody to sell tobacco, and if that's true, I'm glad, you know, I'd like to learn more about it, and I will. So I'd appreciate your following up with me about some of that, so I can get more information and understand that problem better. But yes, you're right. Tobacco and alcohol are co-located frequently. There's not any intention in this bill to say that if you violate laws selling tobacco that you would lose your liquor license. They're two separate problems, and they need to be enforced separately. The licenses need to be separate. But they do need to have a pretty heavy reason to make sure that they obey the law and they don't sell to children. And the license allows us to do that in a way that none of the books, laws on the books right now allow us to do. Does that help, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when looking at the numbers, it looks like we're right in at 94-95% compliance. I don't think we're ever going to get to 100%. You know, I think that's impossible. I think that last few percent would cost us so much money to try to get there. I don't think it's going to, I just personally don't think it's going to get there. I think we're doing a pretty good job right now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bertschinger, if you're referring to the federal enforcement, those statistics are not actually reliable in terms of sales to minors. And they say explicitly on their website that those statistics are not designed to match the SINAR requirements in terms of assessment. And I think actually Senator Boquist can probably help at least as much as I can in this regard. But they're very different enforcement mechanisms, and they're targeted in different ways. They're done in different ways. The way we do enforcement in Oregon of sales to minors is in strict compliance with the SINAR regulations, where we really use decoys who look as if they could be 18, 19, 20 years old, but are 16 years old. They're really very careful about it. They do things differently, and they're enforcing a broader spectrum of things when they do the federal enforcement, and that's why the statistics aren't comparable and why we have to be sure that we have licensure in place so that for the places that violate according to the SINAR rules, we can deal with that, because those numbers are very different, Senator.
One more follow-up.
Thank
you. What is our compliance rate then?
I can't cite that right off the top of my head, Senator, but we will be having testimony from the health authority, and I think they can offer you those numbers better. Part of the problem, though, if I may, is that right now the vast majority of enforcement is contracted to the state police. We all know that the state police are underfunded and understaffed, and that's a big problem. And frankly, they've got more important – I mean, not that tobacco control and prevention isn't important, because it is – but I'd like my state troopers to be doing other things related to major crime, to keeping our roads safe, to doing all the other things that we ask our state police to do. And so it's expensive to ask them to do it. We train our troopers well, and having them run a program like this is more expensive than it would be to have the health authority or other organizations do it. But right now, the other organizations aren't other agencies aren't allowed to do it. This bill would open up the possibility of other state and federal agencies to do enforcement for us according to SINAR restrictions, and we would be able to do it more broadly and reach more retailers. We would also know where all the retailers are. Right now we don't, because of the mobile sales and because of the fact that they don't require any kind of registration. We don't know who's selling tobacco in this state. Licensure would make it possible for us to know and know where to enforce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. If you'll excuse me, I'm going to head back to my other committee.
Thank you. Karen Gerard from the OHA, which will have a new responsibility under this amendment that's being proposed to Senate Bill 663.
Good morning, Chair Haas and members of the committee. I'm Karen Gerard, the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention Section Manager at the Oregon Health Authority. I'm here today to present information related to tobacco prevention and education in Oregon, the data gathered about tobacco retailers in our communities, and health effects associated with tobacco retail practices. Oregon's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program is an evidence-based program that is effective. Since TPEP started in 1997, cigarette consumption in Oregon has been reduced by 50%. TPEP works in partnership with local public health authorities and tribes to prevent and reduce tobacco-related deaths in every Oregon community. Despite declines in tobacco use, it remains the number one preventable cause of death and disease in Oregon. Tobacco is responsible for 7,000 deaths in Oregon each year. Addiction to nicotine starts in adolescence. 9 out of 10 adults who started smoking before turning 18. And last year, 3,300 kids in Oregon started smoking, and that's more than graduated from all the public high schools in Medford, Bend, and Pendleton combined. Addressing tobacco retail practices is one important evidence-based strategy that the state can work on to prevent youth from using tobacco and to help current users quit. Since the inception of TPEP in 1997, smoking rates for 11th graders have declined by about 80%, with current smoking prevalence at approximately 10%. However, youth use of tobacco and other nicotine products, e-cigarettes, large and small cigars, hookah, snuff, dip and chew, are on the rise. And about 18% of 11th graders use other tobacco products. Higher levels of tobacco marketing in the retail space, lower tobacco prices, and greater availability of tobacco coupons and promotions are associated with product uptake among middle and high school students. Tobacco products are cheap, readily available, and easy to get, and are heavily promoted and marketed in stores where kids frequent. The tobacco industry has shifted their marketing from billboards and TV commercials to convenience stores, pharmacies, and grocery stores. In fact, the tobacco industry is spending $112 million each year to advertise and promote their products in Oregon stores. Tobacco products can also be displayed at a young kid's eye level, 3 feet or lower, right near the candy. The tobacco industry's strategy to market to kids in Oregon stores is working. 7 out of 10 Oregon 11th grade students recall seeing an advertisement for tobacco products on a store or inside a store. That's why addressing the retail environment is proven to reduce youth tobacco use. In Oregon, our local public health authorities have conducted tobacco retail assessments in about 1,200 tobacco retail stores and found that the average price of tobacco products ranged from $1.04 for a single flavored little cigar to $4.75 for a pack of cigarettes. And even with excluding menthol cigarette availability, more than 9 in 10 tobacco retailers sold at least one type of flavored tobacco product. 1 in 4 tobacco retailers displayed tobacco products within 12 inches of products that are sold to youth, like toys, candy, gum, slushy or soda machines, or ice cream. Currently, Oregon is one of 8 states that does not require tobacco retailers to hold a license. Retail licensure creates a straightforward method for tracking businesses that sell tobacco products and inhalant delivery systems. The sale of tobacco products are already illegal to children under 18. However, 17% of Oregon's 11th graders who use tobacco reported obtaining it from a store or a gas station in 2013. Furthermore, 21% of tobacco retailers in Oregon illegally sold to minors based on information by the federally funded SINAR program. This bill will greatly help enforce youth access laws. Laws that prohibit sales to minors are important, but alone will not keep kids from using tobacco and nicotine products. We know that to prevent youth initiation of tobacco products, we must take a comprehensive approach that includes reducing youth exposure to products that are cheap, readily available, and easy to find. Public Health Division appreciates the opportunity to testify, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Could you please comment on the Dash 8 amendment and how it affects the Oregon Health Authority, the enforcement aspect, what problems or opportunities this creates for your agency?
The Dash 8 amendment gives the Oregon Health Authority the authority to inspect for sales to minors, violations of federal and state laws for the purposes related to public health and safety, and allows the health authority to enter into agreements with state and federal agencies to conduct the inspections.
Well, I think what we're looking for is, is this proposed amendment a good idea for your agency? Can you do it? Can you not do it? Those kinds of responses would be welcome.
Chair Hess, the Oregon Health Authority recognizes the need to regulate the tobacco retail environment and is ready to implement legislation that is passed.
Senator Boquist.
I'm going to reserve comment at the moment, Mr. Chair. I don't think I want to blow a gasket.
I won't blow a gasket, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bartschiger.
But I am confused. Senator Steiner Hayward said that the federal numbers, which I quoted, 94% compliance, are not good numbers, but you just said they are good numbers?
Chair Haas, Senator Bachinger, there are two different inspection programs, and the statistics that I relayed, about 21% of retailers selling illegally to minors, is for the federally funded SINAR program. The program that Senator Steiner Hayward was referring to in your question was the Food and Drug Administration inspection program, and they are two different inspection programs. But in Oregon, when youth decoys are used to attempt a purchase of tobacco in stores, 21% of the time the store was willing to sell to that minor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
I have a comment. I'm not looking for a response. The FDA program is, I believe, somewhere as of 31st of March, according to public records, is at about 7.2% of 1,900 inspections, including inspections with minors. The SINAR program statistics that we use, according to the information provided by the director of OHA, there were about 1,200 inspections done through the state police. The sample size utilized to fill out the SINAR requirement is just under 400 of those were extracted out of there. I think in the next hearing, Mr. Chair, I mean, when we have the final amendment here, we're going to have a little bit more in depth from OHA, because the intent of what I'm looking at the amendment is to attempt to consolidate programs, mesh them together. The authority is fully aware that the FDA program, and that has been conveyed to me, that the FDA program can be utilized to comply with SINAR, except for the combining of information at the end. And the department has reached out in this regards to other states who are doing this, in which you can merge these programs together to make an efficient and effective inspection program. It is slightly disappointing, Mr. Chair, that the agency, I guess not to their fault, has just seen the amendment and therefore is not able to comment. But before any possible passage, the agency needs to be brought back, and we need to ensure we have clear legislative intent, because before any of us jump off the bridge into this thing, we want to make sure it's the intent's very clear if we're going to go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would tend to agree, especially given the last couple of months of questionable data without any nefarious motives came from your agency. The stats about smoking that you read in your letter are fine, but we need to go much deeper, and perhaps it would have been better to send the director of this agency here to us today to talk about what this is. It's fairly significant legislation to be dropped onto this agency, and so we just need more. Senator Berkshire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, more of a comment, and feel free to comment after my comment, but what I feel like we're doing is there's a point of enforcement that you're going to get, let's say 90%, okay? So the state spends $1 million to get 90% compliance. Then we spend $2 million to get to 92% compliance. Then we spend $3 million to get to 93% compliant. Even if we tightening up with licensing, and I don't discount the fact that some stores may. I'd like to know which stores, but I don't. But even if we tightened all that up, then all we're going to do is have somebody who is old enough go purchase it for somebody that is not old enough. So it's how you weigh how much taxpayers' money we're going to spend to achieve which results is what I'm concerned about. So if we can spend $1 million and get a 90 or 94% compliance, I think that is pretty good. But to spend $2 million to only move the needle a little bit, I don't think that that's using the taxpayers' money wisely. So that's why I have a lot of concern about this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. No further questions. Thank you. Thank you. Reagan Gray. Upstream Public Health.
Thank you. Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Reagan Gray with Upstream Public Health, and thank you for your work to address the issue of illegal sales of cigarettes to minors. Tobacco retail licensing is a common sense approach to create a system to license retailers and enforce restrictions on no sales to minors. This is one of those policies where the devil is really in the details. A poor licensing system is worse than no licensing system at all. But a good system, highly effective at preventing the next generation of smokers from starting this addictive habit. There are aspects of Senate Bill 663 with the dash eights that get the policy right. But there are the following provisions do not best support the health of Oregon's children and future generations. We do not like the provision, number one, that allows for the exemption of sampling in vape shops. Nowhere else in Oregon law is it allowed to sample this highly addictive product in any business or public space. Second, the policy should require more proactive education and training of retailers, including in-person training and resources that are culturally and language specific. And third, we do not support the limitations on localities to adopt smart, locally appropriate policies to regulate tobacco products. Local authorities' authority allows for more opportunities to craft these smart policies that respond to new changes in the market. Thank you for all of your work on tobacco licensure, and I really appreciate the time listening to my comments.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions? Good.
Thanks.
Thank you. Going down the list here, Sean Miller from the Northwest Grocery Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. We have concerns with Senate Bill 663 as it passed out of the Health Care Committee, as well as the Dash 8 amendment that we've just been able to look at. But we, you know, our concerns, from the retailer side are, you know, we're more than willing to have the conversation of about what a statewide license looks like. So we have certain elements that we'd like to see in here. We have not been able to have that discussion with the advocates on what a good license is. I would agree with the last person to testify as the devil's in the details. I think the first issue we'd like to talk about is who should be the regulatory authority to administer and enforce the program. The bill that came out of the Health Care Committee had OLCC. There's discussion of DOR and the Health Authority. In the Dash 8 amendments, it seems very awkward to have the two agencies working on the authority and administration of the license. I think from our standpoint, just based on how our retailers work currently and on the alcohol side, It appears that OLCC, given those three choices, would be the most appropriate. And I would encourage the chair, just then the committee to look at or at least discuss with OLCC what their current programs, including the Responsible Vendor Program. That is a program that's purpose is to reduce underage drinking and to encourage the licenses to adopt specific best practices on preventing those sales to minors. And so the issues that I've heard in the testimony prior, if the issue is about selling to minors, we do have a good program set up at OLCC in this Responsible Vendor Program that is a voluntary program that provides ongoing training to employees and incentivizes retailers to put that training in place. Again, the programs are put forth by the retailers, so the retailers put together their programs on those ongoing trainings, and there's compliance to that training. And so if the issue is making sure your employees are not selling to minors, there is a program set up to do that. We feel that on the tobacco side, we could incorporate that in on the OLCC very easily, given this this program that we think has been successful, given the three options that we've heard regarding the DOR and the health authority. For fees and penalties, we also it should be authorized by statute and just not left up to the administrative rules. I think more thought needs to be put into what those fees structure and that the penalties should be. Same for the requirements and conditions. And I think last, Mr. Chair, I'll just touch on the preemption. I understand in the Dash 8 there is preemption language on licensing. You know, again, that would be a must-have for us in any bill moving forward to avoid duplicate regulation of tobacco and prevent a patchwork of local ordinances or county ordinances around the state on top of a state license. So that's a major concern of ours. We actually would propose just slightly different language that would state a local government may not enact or enforce a local law or license to inhibit or prevent the selling of tobacco or nicotine inhalant delivery system as authorized under this license. That would give complete authority to the state if we were to go down this road in this bill on regulating tobacco and nicotine inhaler delivery systems, and therefore eliminate that duplicate structure, which we were concerned about down the road. So with that, Mr. Chair, those are our comments based on what we've seen so far, and happy to participate in any discussions moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, and I do appreciate your willingness to help move this bill with certain conditions, but of course you understand that if this doesn't get through, then you will have Multnomah County, Clackamas County, the city of whatever, wherever, with all kinds of regulations that are, I'm guessing, will be much more severe than anything proposed in this amendment, and so that's that crazy quilt nightmare that I know you don't want. So,
absolutely. Thank you.
Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I just one clarification. The present inspection and licensing options, I just want to make sure I understand, since I have a feeling I'm going to be involved in the next step of this, if there is a next step. The Department of Revenue presently regulates taxation all the way to retailers, including 3,600 retailer tax returns. Mm-hmm. The Oregon Health Authority has had or has two inspection programs in addition to DOR. One is retired state troopers doing, for a better word, I'll just call courtesy inspections because they don't have citation authority. OHA then has a contract with the Oregon State Police dated the April 10th, the day after our last hearing, in which they contract to do 1,200 up to 1,200 to 1,500 Oregon State Police inspections, who can issue citations. It's this documentation of 1,200 in which the 400 sample size creates the signer report. The Food and Drug Administration has done 1,900 inspections since October 1 to March 31st. Good news there is there's only a 6% failure rate out of the 1,900, and that does include minors. There is an option under the federal law for the state to take over that FDA contract. We learned yesterday in testimony, or 2 days ago, which is why my vote on SB 190, the Department of Justice has another inspection program and enforcement program in which they do sting operations. So now we're at DOR, 2OHA, FDA, DOJ, and now we have the suggestion to create what would be the sixth program and regulatory agency, which is OLCC. I'm struggling, Sean. Can you give me some help here? Are you really calling for a consolidation over at OLCC?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, your point is correct. We have a lot of people coming into our retail stores inspection already. I think what we're trying to say is, instead of just having some kind of inspection process, maybe this license should focus in on more education, training requirements, which we do on the alcohol side. Again, we have those same inspectors inspecting in OLCC for underage on the alcohol side. So we do have folks coming in currently within OLCC. I think we're looking at is consolidating that and focusing more on the training aspect of employees not selling to minors versus just funding a mechanism where they're just coming in and inspecting our stores.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll call up three people: Carrie Nyson, Lorraine Nichols, Morgan Cowling. Come on up.
Good morning, Chair Haas and committee members. My name is Carrie Neeson, and I'm the Vice President of Advocacy and Air Quality for the American Lung Association of the Mountain Pacific. And for us, this legislation is all about our kids, and it's about putting evidence-based policies into place to discourage the use of tobacco products so we can avoid a lifetime addiction to nicotine and premature death. And because it's about our kids, the American Lung Association really wants to make sure that we get this right and put forward the best policy. We're very concerned about the Dash 8 amendments, and we respectfully ask for additional dialogue so we can make sure that we get it right for our kids. We're concerned about the preemption, and we're also concerned about some of the other conditions in there. So, support retail licensure. We think it's a good best practice policy. It's a good thing to put in our toolkit, but we just want to make sure that we get it right. So we hope we can have some additional discussion to do that. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lorraine Nichols, and I'm the Director of Community Health Services for Multnomah County Health Department. And Chair Haas and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today about Senate Bill 663 and the Dash 8 amendments. And I want to also appreciate you for the vital conversation that's going on here today and the humor also that you've brought to some of the questions. I really appreciate that while we're dealing with a pretty serious issue around
tobacco.
Yeah. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners has really taken an in-depth look at this issue of illegal sales to minors and this kind of growing access of electronic cigarettes to youth. And so our board recently passed a local ordinance banning sales of e-cigarettes to minors and also including electronic cigarettes in our smoke-free workplace law. The vast majorities of smokers do begin before the age of 18, and you've heard about that. And meaningful efforts to keep youth away from these products does include regulation of the tobacco retail environment. And I know we've heard some debate about the data, but we know in Multnomah County, based on this SINAR data, that we have one of the highest rates of illegal sales to minors in the country, and one in four retailers have readily sold to youth decoys. And that's a real concern to us in public health, and it's a concern for our commissioners. And our board has signaled their intent to move ahead on the issue of tobacco retail licensure if the state doesn't. And we really want to be seen as just strong and supportive partners with you all in reducing youth access to tobacco. Tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death. And you've heard about we're one of the few states that doesn't have a retail licensure program. And in many of the communities where they've put that in place, they've seen the rates of illegal sales to minors go down by upwards of 30%. And we think that's really significant. And that having tobacco retail licensing, it allows Oregon to identify all the retailers that are selling tobacco and electronic cigarettes. Despite all these regulations, we really don't have a list at the health department that tells us everyone that's selling these products in our community in a regular way. and many of our constituents in the community really expect that we have this, being that tobacco is such a serious problem. They think that that is in place. It does give us an opportunity to educate business about these myriad of laws and regulations. And we've had retailers, during a retail assessment that was done by one of our community partners, the retailers are saying to us, we would appreciate your assistance. We would appreciate your help in educating us about these laws so we can be compliant and we can meet the letter of the law and we can keep this out of the hands of kids. It gives us a mechanism to ensure that we do have compliance with those laws for youth, and it gives us some better control over where and how tobacco is sold in our communities. Multnomah County supports the ability for local jurisdictions to enact additional requirements above the state and federal laws. And having that local control is really important. It allows us to be agile. There's a myriad of new products, as you've seen in the work that you've been doing, that is just pouring onto the market. And it gives us an ability to try to get ahead of that, to be a little more nimble. And for communities also to look at what are the most important strategies for their community. We do oppose the provision that would restrict the use of licensing to only enforce the state and federal laws. And we'd ask that the bill be amended to allow licensure to be used for the enforcement of all laws, regardless of where those originated. And we're really concerned about the provision that will allow sampling in vape shops. There's a growing body of evidence that shows that this, you know, water vapor isn't just harmless water. I mean, it's laden with chemicals and lead and particulates. I mean, you can just go into a vape shop and sort of see, smell, and feel that. And that secondhand vape is a real concern. There's just a growing body of evidence around that. And by exempting vape shops, it creates some confusion about the enforcement of smoking prohibitions, and it also exposes those employees to great harm, and a lot of times to unsuspecting individuals that share the ventilation systems. So we encourage the committee to consider removing the language that allows smoking in vape shops. So thank you again for the opportunity to weigh in on this, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. The Coalition of Local Health Officials represents the 34 local health departments in Oregon who work to protect the public's health and prevent the spread of disease. And I'm here to talk to you about the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 663. You know, one of the top goals of our tobacco prevention and education programs operating in our local health departments is to curb youth access to nicotine products. Local health departments are charged with protecting the health of Oregonians and work to create strong policies to restrict access to e-cigarettes and tobacco. And retail licensure is one of the most important tools for those prevention efforts. As it's already been talked about, there is some evidence that shows in Oregon it's often easy for kids to buy nicotine products. One of the things we know is that retail licensure is an important tool to get sales of minor rates and compliance. In fact, SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, recommends several regulatory approaches, and the first and foremost is a strong retail the enforcement of tobacco retail laws. So we are definitely supportive of a retail license program and want to make sure that we get it right. That said, we do have some concerns with the Dash 8 amendments. First, one thing that has been talked about that we do support is the combination effort between the Department of Revenue and the Oregon Health Authority that's in the Dash 8 amendments. We think that's an improvement to ensure that connection between those two agencies. We are concerned about Section 2, Sub 2, the preemption of city and counties to enact their own ordinances. We do have jurisdictions in Oregon that have stronger retail licensure programs, that this would curb their work. And we would be strongly concerned with attempts to limit the ability of locals to create ordinances that improve the health of their community. One of the two other concerns, we have Section 7, sub 3 and 4, which would only allow the Oregon Health Authority from entering into agreements for enforcement with state and federal agencies. Local health departments exist across Oregon and may be a strong partner in these enforcement efforts. And then Section 6, which Lorene just mentioned, that includes the exemption for sampling. We do also have a couple of jurisdictions that do not allow sampling of these products, and we think that that should be the model for the statewide law. So last I'd say that one of the missing provisions is something that was already mentioned too, around training and education of retailers. We think that an important aspect of a retail program would be to ensure front-end training as well. And again, local health departments, local public health authorities stand ready to work on that and work with this committee to get this bill right this session. Thank you for your work on this.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward. Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question, and I apologize. I missed the first part of the hearing. I was at a work group meeting, but I just could not, on a different issue in a different committee, and there were people that had come from a long way away, and I just couldn't break out of it. So I apologize if you already covered this. I agree with the goals here. Could you speak to why it is, or how licensure specifically as a tool increases compliance? It sounds like there are a lot of inspection efforts and whatnot, and we're talking about instituting a license, and I can't remember what it was that you said something. One of you said something that made me, you know, triggered that thought in my mind. Okay, well, what is it? Maybe you already spoke to it, and I'm sorry if you already did, and you're repeating earlier testimony. Is it that you have a license that you can take away, and that, and because the current fine structure is just a slap on the wrist and doesn't really matter to retailers, or what?
Chair Haas, Senator Edwards. Yes, I think that there's important pieces in this legislation around restricting mobile sales. And also, I think that the ability to revoke, suspend license for those that are chronically selling to minors is definitely a very important piece of this legislation that would be would move us forward in preventing youth access.
Yeah, and as thank you, Morgan, and as Senator Steiner Hayward said earlier, that it is important to have that ability to really have a strong enforcement mechanism, that you really can have consequences, because as some of the earlier people that testified said, it's better to have a strong retail licensure system than just something that doesn't really have much teeth in it. For us also, I mean, we really don't even have a mechanism in Multnomah County to have a full list of all the retail establishments. There's no regular process that they have to go through to kind of declare that they're going to be selling tobacco. A lot of small businesses purchase them at Costco. They're not, you know, on the wholesale list. We do think that it gives us an ability to also do some education, because then we have a process to go out into the retail environment and really help people understand these myriad of laws. There's a number of businesses that are in violation of some of the advertising restrictions, and they really just haven't been able to keep track of the different regulations. So we think that that's really key, and really kind of shows the seriousness of the issue. And as we get emerging products and new ways that you know, tobacco products and nicotine products come into the industry, if we've got that kind of registry, if we've got a process of education, if we've got a process that has some sort of strong enforcement, then we really can have a tighter system and don't have to keep coming back at every time that there's a new product and say, we have no way to address this.
I probably have some more questions, but yeah. I know I'm being sensitive of your time,
well,
Mr. Chair,
running the meeting. I very much appreciate your testimony and the places where we could improve or change this amendment. This is our first swing at this. Really what it comes down to, though, is a policy choice for us up here as to whether to do a one statewide set of rules so that the Safeways of the world can enforce the same rules in Portland as they do in Grants Pass. And or not, or we could say no. It's sort of every man for himself, and I appreciate mm-hmm. local control. And you would have strict restrictions in Multnomah County, maybe no restrictions in Yamhill County. And if that's a better policy, that's really the choice here, as to whether we want the local governments to regulate this, or to have one simple statewide rule. And that gets into the preemption. The local governments are arguing, don't prohibit us from doing everything. Others are saying, please prohibit them from doing all of these other things. So there's a middle ground there that I think we're trying to do on this bill if we do it. And that's, to me, a preference. And I always like having one simple set of statewide rules for everyone, whether it's Costco, as you mentioned, or Safeway, or gas stations, versus, okay, you guys are on your own. And I know the restrictions that are being talked about in Multnomah County and other places, and they're much more strict than what we have in here. And I know other counties just aren't doing anything. They don't have the resources and the manpower to enforce these regulations. So that's kind of what we're struggling for. Appreciate your engagement through this, and we'll have some more amendments for you to look at or not. Senator Birchiger.
First, I'd like to thank you ladies for coming in, and I very sympathetic to your frustration. I have the same frustration. But one thing I haven't heard in this committee today about the concern is these products into our youth. How about parenting? If you ask my boys, they'll tell you very quickly where dad is on tobacco products. Okay. Why aren't we talking about parenting? Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much for your thoughtful consideration.
We only have a few minutes left, and I do not want to leave out Richard Kosasan and Justin Rainey. So, cleanup hitters. They have batters.
That's the entire list. Nobody else signed up.
I'll be free.
Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, Justin Rainey, I'm here today on behalf of 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven stores are here today in opposition to Senate Bill 663, and we're here today in opposition to the Dash 8 amendments. We haven't had a full amount of time for a really thorough review, but we do want to highlight some initial comments and concerns with the amendments. Section 2, we would share the concerns raised by the Northwest Grocers Association that the preemption doesn't go far enough. We think that if we're going to go down this path, we need to have a strong preemption that has the states setting the policy for the regulation of tobacco products. So we would not be able to support anything without stronger language. We have concerns with Section 4. Section 4 would require the Department of Revenue to license the different premises. While we think the Department of Revenue is the right agency to do the administration of this, we don't believe that they should be doing it by rule. We believe there should be some certainty for businesses, so that should be set in statute so that we know what it takes to obtain a license and what it takes to renew a license so that small businesses across the state have clarity. We also don't think that the fee should be established by rule. We think that it should be set by in statute, at least the maximum amount should be set in statute. As it relates to Section 6, this is the portion 6 and 13 deals with sampling. This section, I just want to point out that we would be neutral to this section. We wouldn't care if it was in or out. It doesn't impact us. So it's not something that the industry, at least 7-Eleven, is really cares about. Section 7, dealing with inspections and enforcement, You know, we've listened to the discussion about the agencies that should be responsible. We feel that if the state does move forward with the licensure, that the Department of Revenue should be the agency that's handling all of the inspection and enforcement provisions. They currently are doing this to regulate tax compliance. We think they're the best agency to oversee this. We don't think it makes sense to have several agencies duplicating the work. If we're going to go down this path, we would like to see the Department of Revenue have the authority, and maybe they could have the ability to enter into agreements with the FDA for compliance, or with the state police who are currently doing the checks, or something around there. But that would be our preferred agency to deliver this. The same thing, too, in terms of just the overall, the ability to revoke a license. My reading, it looks like Section 8 would give the Department of Revenue, as well as the Oregon Health Authority, the ability to revoke a license. You know, really our key concerns with the provisions is we don't know what they'd be, what constitutes a revocation, what, you know, what the rules around a renewal would be. There's just no real clarity or certainty in the draft. And that's something that our stores really need moving forward. I also want to highlight Section 9, some concerns with the penalty structure. Really, it's more, I think, a question than a concern. Section 9 would create civil penalties. The penalty schedule, to me, appears to reflect that the FDA currently has or enforces. So the question, I guess, is, are we as a state going to impose a penalty, and then the feds will impose an additional penalty for the violation, or would we just be asking the agency to report the penalty on the small business in the store to the federal government, and that's where the penalty would take place? Those are some of the highlight concerns. I do want to put on the record, I mean, 7-Eleven, we have a strong no-tolerance policy for selling to minors. Someone violates that product, or that if they sell to a minor, they're fired. A store owner, we have it written into our contracts. If you're a franchisee, if you have two violations, you could lose your franchise. So really for 7-Eleven, they take it very seriously. Our big concern with all of this is we need the certainty for businesses and stores to know they can keep the locations, that we can renew the licenses. And our concerns are really that without strong preemption language, that could go away. And then without certainty as to how you would go through renewing a license, again, businesses just don't know what compliance would be. With that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you.
Chair Hass, Richard Kosasan with the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association. I concur with comments from my colleague here to my right in terms of provisions of the amendment, but I would maybe point out a few issues. According to the CDC, 9 states don't require a license. 5 states require a license only for vending machines. And then if you look at the other states in terms of licensing, Alabama requires a registration, not a license, but a registration for individuals selling untaxed product for tax compliance. Arkansas requires a permit ranging from $20 to $50. California is a one-time license of $100. Delaware requires a license for untaxed product. Florida is a one-time $50 permit. Georgia is $10 electronic licensing. Hawaii is $20 permit. Iowa is $12.50 to $100. Louisiana is $25 for a year. Nevada is a dealer's license, no fee. North Dakota is a $15 license. So it's to suggest that 44 states require licensing is probably a little less than clear. In terms of information available, I would encourage the committee to look at statutory provisions in 323-250. To promote administrative and regulatory efficiency and compliance with the laws regulating or taxing cigarettes, the Department of Revenue may transmit information obtained under 323-005 to 323-482 to the proper officers of governmental units inside and outside Oregon that regulate or tax tobacco products or enforce laws relating to tobacco products. reciprocate in the exchange of relevant information. If one were to look at the provisions at 323-340, I believe, when people suggest that we don't know who's selling tobacco, on or before the 20th day of January, April, July, and October, every distributor shall file on forms prescribed by the Department of Revenue a report containing any information the department may require to carry out the purposes of 323-005 to 323-482. So in terms of information, it's available, it's out there, and the Department of Revenue has it and can provide it. In terms of the enforcement and inspection, we have, as indicated before, we have inspections through Health Authority, too. We have Department of Revenue in terms of inspecting for tax compliance. We have the FDA inspecting. We have Department of Justice inspecting. And please not forget, we have local inspections. As Senator Bertschuger indicated earlier, we have umpteen laws on the books right now, and I think it's a matter of enforcement and it's a matter of education. I would encourage the committee members to look at the WeCard program, which is a national program for education, and if that can be enhanced, I think that would be an absolute perfect direction. I don't believe you will achieve 100% compliance. Somebody, sometime, will make an inadvertent mistake. I think that's human nature. Do most retailers want to be very, very responsible in terms of prohibiting any type of distribution or sale to minors? And I would argue very strongly the answer is yes.
Okay.
In terms of funding, if one were to look at the Federal Tobacco Control Act enacted in 2009, FDA was granted, and the dollars come from manufacturers predominantly through a user fee, but dollars available to individual states. Since 2009, the program actually started in 2010, Oregon has received one grant in the amount of $737,000. But if you look in comparison to other states, Washington, we're looking at multiple grants at $4.4 million. Idaho, to our neighbor, is multiple grants at $2.4 million. So I think resources are there for enforcement, inspection, and education. We should access those.
Richard, I need you to wrap it up, please. We're going to get kicked out of our hearing room.
Mr. Chair, I just wrapped up.
Thank you. Quick question.
One quick comment, Mr. Chair. I agree that there are multiple laws on the books about tobacco, sales to minors, et cetera, et cetera. What we don't have is a way to stop it, and licensure is a way to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Don't adjourn.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 663.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules to allow Senator Edwards to vote on SB, the amendment for SB 925 and the main bill of SB 190A.
1925 as amended.
As amended.
What?
It's an amendment.
Senator Boklis moves we suspend the rules to allow Senator Edwards to vote on Senate Bill 190. Without objection. Senator Edwards, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator Edwards votes aye on Senate Bill 190, and I'm going to close that order of business. And without objection, I'll open up the work session on Senate Bill 925 for purposes of allowing Senator Edwards to vote on the Dash 1 amendment. Senator Edwards, how do you vote?
Aye.
Senator Edwards votes aye on the Dash 1 amendment. And in exchange for this, from the committee, he has agreed to carry Senate Bill 190. And we have no other business before us. Thank you all. Game. We will adjourn.
In exchange for this.
I just want you to know I'm
transactional on. Transactional on.
I just want you to know I'm.